Coming up in just a few minutes, we have Georgia Kelly of the Praxis Peace Institute, and she'll be talking about the Economics of Peace Conference coming up in October in Sonoma. Meanwhile, let's play Peace Doves by our very own Kim Tripp-Smith.
Lit a candle for the world, for peace and for my boy and girl, and for children everywhere, for their moms and dads who care. For the life itself, it seems, will they ever get to live their dreams? They're just like you and me, we're all the same, you see. People everywhere need love, so please release the peace doves. Too tired to cry. War is such a painful lie. Bomb democracy into place, and then upon their oil we'll feast. With our weapons we gon' shock and awe, but that's not what those people saw. They saw the children running scared, they saw the daisy cutters flare, they felt the earth shake beneath their feet. Please release the peace doves. Release the peace doves. La da da da. Tonight, what will it take? What will it take? What will it take to open our eyes?
Yes, Peace Doves and Kim Tripp-Smith, and what will it take to open our lives, our eyes? Perhaps our guest, Georgia Kelly, has the answer. Are you there, Georgia?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for coming on Cows Radio here in Occidental.
It's a pleasure.
And now, Georgia belongs to the Praxis Peace Institute. Could you tell us about what it is and its history?
Well, Praxis Peace Institute actually was launched about 9 years ago at a conference that I helped put together in Dubrovnik, Croatia in 2000. And the focus of that conference was peace building and how do we, what was an inquiry actually, what are the components of peace that we aren't seeing? Why do we still have the recurrence of the same wars century after century and decade after decade, and what is it we aren't learning that we need to look at? So that was the initial inquiry that was really only supposed to be a conference, but of course at the end of that 7 days we realized we had just scratched the surface of the question and we needed to continue in some form. So rather than just decide to do another conference, a group of people came together then and decided to form a nonprofit organization. And that was the birth of Praxis Peace Institute, to continue the inquiry into how do we create cultures of peace.
Right, and where are you located?
In Sonoma.
Oh, so you are very, very local.
I'm very local, yes. We're part of Sonoma County's nonprofit community.
Oh,
So you go out and solicit for funds from philanthropic groups or state groups?
From foundations, and we have a membership. We do have members of Praxis Peace Institute who help support our programs, and then they get quarterly newsletters and updates on our events, which we usually have fairly frequent events, evening events with speakers and sometimes workshops and conflict resolution, that sort of thing. And then we have conferences every other year. And last year, the off year from a conference, we had a five-day seminar at the Mondragon Cooperatives in Spain. So we took about 20 people to Spain. And we hope to do that again next year, actually.
Oh, and so what would you do there? What was the plan?
Well, in fact, we're going to be showcasing that at our conference in Sonoma this October. The Mondragon Cooperatives are worker-owned businesses. In fact, they are the largest consortium of worker-owned businesses in the world, with over 120 businesses that are democratically run and owned by the workers.
Oh.
So the first Mondragon business that was set up this way was initiated maybe 54 years ago by a Catholic priest in Mondragon named Arizmendi. And he began a movement that has become incredibly successful, and now they comprise so many businesses and over 104,000 worker owners. And it's in the Basque region, in the northwestern part of Spain.
Huh. Interesting. Was it just that one person really made it happen there, or was there something waiting to happen?
It was his vision, and it was an impoverished area at the time, and now it has the highest standard of living in all of Spain now. That region.
Really?
It went from, you know, severe poverty to this incredible level of... It's sustainable. It's middle class, primarily middle class, but it's a very... It's a middle class that we're not quite used to in this country.
Huh.
There's no poverty and there's no great wealth, so it's really an equitable society.
They've smoothed that out, basically.
So that we went there as preparation for the conference we're doing in October here, called the Economics of Peace, and we've been researching the different economic models that support peaceful relationships.
Mm.
And we found that worker ownership and a democratic workplace certainly support peace.
Yeah.
So we learned from them, and then I invited the educational director from there and also an American who's been teaching at their university for 8 years to come and speak to our conference about what they've done in Spain.
Huh.
So we'll have a whole day looking at worker-owned businesses and how it works, how businesses could convert to that model, and we were so inspired by what we learned that I thought we want to bring it back here and expose other people to it.
Oh, wonderful idea. I mean, those ideas have been put forward in the past, it seems, but have fallen on rocky ground, you know.
Well, they don't necessarily have a culture that supports it, and I have since found that there are many worker-owned businesses in the Bay Area, and we are going to showcase some of them at the conference as well.
Mm. Oh, excellent. So, well, perhaps we should just back up, and you're organizing this incredible conference called the Economics of Peace Conference in Sonoma. Perhaps you can give us a brief rundown of what's happening there.
I would be happy to do so. Funny you should mention. It will take place between October 18th and 23rd, which is a Sunday to Friday. So it's a five-day or five-and-a-half-day conference. Well, there will be a couple of evenings open for separate tickets, but it's really planned as a whole piece, as our conferences usually are. They're between 5 and 7 days, usually. And the purpose is to really have time to go deeply into questions and to have an opportunity for people to network, to speak with the presenters, who usually stay all week. So there's a lot of communication between speakers, workshop leaders, and participants. And basically everyone's equal at these conferences. Some people have speaking roles, but there isn't any of the star power type of environment. It's an equitable environment where, you know, everyone hangs out together. And since we're doing it not at a hotel but within a local living economy on the square of Sonoma, it's different than any conference we've done. We're doing morning sessions in the Sebastiani Theater, for instance, and afternoon workshops in the community center and on the square, and then evening programs in different venues around the square. So we have... We're working within a local economy, and many of the local businesses are offering discounts to our participants and are getting very involved in the conference, which is wonderful.
Well, yeah, it needs that integration, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, literally, it's going to be in the plaza there. Are you going to, like, fence it off, and then people will come in and
no, we're not going to do any fencing.
Okay.
Because we have, you know, the morning sessions will be in a theater, and then they come out for a break in the park, and they go back in. And then in the afternoon, they have lunch, and then they have workshops in the community center, which is not right on the plaza. It's a block and a half away. But everything's within a two-block radius or a block and a half of the plaza.
What a wonderful idea.
Yeah, it's really fun because it's actually launched in a local economy.
Right. But be careful, they have those, what is it, those ducks or geese are always bothering people there.
Oh, the chickens were, but the chickens aren't there anymore.
Okay.
It's just ducks, and they're lovely little ducks.
Okay.
They're ducky, you know.
There used to be some nasty ones there, I remember.
That has been, well, not since they refurbished the pond. It's beautiful.
Oh, okay.
A beautiful new pond and very sweet ducks.
So, now, I mean, you've got some an incredible lineup of people, really heavy hitters.
We do have heavy hitters. Yes, James Galbraith, who is a well-known professor of economics and the son of John Kenneth Galbraith. And he's written several books, one, The Predator State, which I recently read. And he happens to be on sabbatical, so we were able to get him for a day and a half or 2 days. He'll be with us. And I'm very excited about that because he is not easy to book. So, you know, to have a leading economist like that is very important. And we have Bandana Shiva, who's another well-known Indian physicist and has been really involved a lot in agriculture in India. She's written several books about the privatization of water and about the Green Revolution. A very knowledgeable woman and an excellent speaker, and has really worked with the land and worked with activist groups in India primarily. Very interesting woman.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, and then there are other people like Sam Keen, who's a local, and he will be deconstructing the economic mythos that is part of our culture.
Okay.
So that we can see where we're all plugged in certain ways, and that prevents us from being imaginative or creative with alternatives.
Right. Well, that's the key, isn't it? It's always so cloudy when you're trying to put forward, you know, green things or sustainable, you know, how you get that across without the eyes glazing for the general public and everything. It's so critical to be able to somehow, you know, communicate.
Well, that's what I was thinking when we were putting this together. I thought, you know, it's fine to talk about alternatives, but unless we see how we're plugged into the system that has shaped us and our thinking, we aren't really going to get very far. So I've been actually meeting with Sam for over a year talking about this deconstructing piece because I find it fascinating. Since we're all brainwashed to some degree or a greater degree, it's looking at this from that position of, okay, where are we trapped? Where is our visionary capability blocked? And why is it blocked? What have we been taught? What do we need to deconstruct? And that inquiry process is what allows the creative imagination to open to other possibilities and to envision other ideas and to be open to other ideas presented to one.
Right, so it's not just, you know, a matter of saying, well, we need to do something about energy, but actually, okay, let's get down to the nuts and bolts of it. How do we make that change?
How do we make that change from a personal level, and how do we change the cultural story by, you know, in creating new stories that are part of an emerging economy that, you know, we don't see any evidence of in the mainstream press, but there is an emerging model that you can read about in Yes Magazine, for instance, or you know, you'll see it in alternative publications, but it's very hard to come by in the mainstream.
Right, and how obviously the economy is a big factor right now.
Indeed it is. You know, when I thought about doing this topic 2 years ago, when we were in Dubrovnik, Croatia, doing a conference on culture and looking at how culture shapes our sense of reality, and that really dovetails nicely to this conference because we're looking at economic culture as well. And at the end of that conference, I remember saying, I think the next topic we need to take on is the economics of peace.
Mm-hmm.
Not foreseeing that this would all hit the fan in 2008, but it did. And so it made this theme more relevant than ever.
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely Johnny on the spot is the thing to be, I suppose.
Yeah, or just a little ahead of it.
Oh, a little ahead of it, yeah, exactly.
Because it takes planning to put a conference like this together. But I wanted to do something on economics because I think it's a pivotal piece to getting to peace. That if we need economic relationships that support peace, and primarily what our economic relationships are about war.
Right.
And the need for war over resources or over establishing power, authority, control. So we need another cultural identity and another economic model.
Right, because it's linked together. The military-industrial complex has got us in its death grip, hasn't it?
It certainly does.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to unravel.
Exactly. And you've got some other people, obviously, who've been working in the trenches, like Denis Kucinich. You've got coming in.
I'm not sure that we do have him coming in. It looks like he may not be able to be with us.
Oh, okay.
But we do have Lynn Woolsey,
excellent,
who's our Congress representative. And we'll probably have some other local elected or California elected people as well, and possibly even another congressperson.
Yes.
It's good to have elected people at these conferences, and we always do.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, there is a system you've got to go through. So, you know, without breaking it all down, you've got to have some idea about what you're up against.
And we need some allies that are, we need elected allies who we can talk to.
Well, yeah, I mean, apart from obviously the people who are coming, who are giving you support? Where are you getting your support from now? Is that something that's growing?
What type of support are you talking about?
Just from people, from whether it's even corporate support, institutional support.
Well, actually, one of the greatest supports of this conference, and this is the first one we've actually partnered with another organization. We have partnered with RSF Social Finance in San Francisco.
Mm.
They're in the Presidio. And they have been wonderful in terms of helping get this conference off the ground, and also being very involved in the process of speaker selection, workshops, and they've really been partners in all sense of the word.
Mm.
So they've been very involved in creating this conference and have been interested in doing a conference like this. And so our connection became a very good opportunity for both Praxis and RSF Social Finance.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, you have to find
partners
wherever you can.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, especially when we're very aligned, and really we're looking to do the same thing. So it worked out perfectly.
Right. Well, there is a lot of, businesses who are sort of going, you know, green economics, I suppose, where financial companies are moving into that, it seems. I don't know how genuine it is or if it's going the right way, but there is an effort, it seems, to address the financial system and how to green it.
Well, this is an interesting conundrum, and we were going to look at this at the conference, because there's two ways of becoming green in business. One is greenwashing,
mm-hmm.
which is a PR campaign.
Right.
Has very little to do with real green economics. And I would say a lot of the larger corporations, that's what they're doing. And I think it's very hard to call a business sustainable that may be doing some green things that one can point to, but still are paying minimum wage to the workers.
Right.
I don't separate the labor conditions and the labor pay from the green.
Mm.
They're all part of the same piece.
Yes.
And if we're not treating workers well, then we're not we're not supporting peace, really, because without justice, there isn't peace.
Exactly. No, as you say, the whole picture has to be held by everybody.
Yes, and it's multifaceted. It isn't just, oh, we're not going to use paper bags anymore, or we're going to use the proper light bulbs, or we're going to dim the lights for so many hours of the day. Those are all fine, but they're a way that they're usually used in PR campaigns.
Right, like, you know, I think, I don't know, some car company says, we're the greenest car company. I mean, you know, it's like...
Yes.
How can a car company be green
in
any way?
It's a bit of an oxymoron.
Yeah.
It's
pretty sickening.
Well, and there's shades, you know. I mean, certainly there are some businesses much worse than others and some better than others. But I think what we're going to look at is what does green mean in terms of real sustainability and equality, social justice, creating cultures of peace. How does this all work together rather than what we're so good at in this society is compartmentalizing?
Right.
And the whole object of actually all the conferences we've done is to get away from compartmentalizing and to see how they all connect in a way that creates a whole piece.
Right.
And so that's another area that we're actually going to be questioning at the conference.
Right, because the system has created this structure and that we're living in, and...
That's right.
You know, we have to change it. They're happy to keep it just the way it is.
Well, that's it. And you know, there are ways of doing a certain amount of change that doesn't really hit the systemic change that's needed.
Mm.
It's that kind of surface change, or Band-Aids to real problems. And what we're looking at is how do we do a systemic change, not just, you know, make it look better for now, but how do we really change the model? And that's the more challenging part, and it has to come from people who put pressure on political representatives, because they can't do change on that level without a lot of support.
Yes, as we've seen, you know, in the healthcare debate, 75% of the people want it, but for some reason they don't want it.
Well, I think it's what we're seeing is that how the media is bought and paid for, and why it's, you know, when it's under the control of so few companies, you're going to get one point of view, which is primarily what we do get,
right?
And you see a minority getting holding the news hostage in a way, a minority getting more recognition for their point of view than the majority by far.
Well, that's it. Yeah, all those town hall protests. I mean, it was very few people actually involved in it, yet they got 75% of the.
And that's the problem.
Yeah,
that's the problem. You would think by the coverage they get that they are a majority.
Yeah,
but they're the small minority. So it's, you know, it's interesting to look at that and to understand that. What they're attempting to do, which is basically steal the spotlight and make people think that they are a much bigger group than they are. But it did sway the argument for quite some time.
Yes.
Where the public option was practically off the table.
Yeah, I mean, really. They were running from it like it had the plague.
Which is really shocking to me. And I think, you know, it's back on now. And I expect it will pass.
Yeah.
But it's been a real struggle to hold the Congress people and senators, even more so, accountable to the public that wants this public option.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Got to keep their feet to the fire. And
because they've got the insurance lobbyists there all the time.
The millions and billions they spend, But, that, you know, it's the whole grassroots thing, reaching people. I was saying earlier on our earlier show, a local hardware store had, you know, has those little classes they give, you know, for different things. And they had one, and they normally have about 15 or 20 people. And the last one they had was on canning and preservation. Something like 105 people turned up.
Mm.
So I think people have suddenly been brought up, you know, short by this the economic climate, and have realized that they've got to take the power into their own hands.
Well, that brings another point to what we are going to be talking about at the conference, which is creating local currencies and establishing more interactive support. support within a local community, growing food, having services exchanged. So we're going to look at the creation of local currencies like the Berkshires in Massachusetts, for instance, and time dollars. So we're looking at different models, as well as a global system of connecting local currencies, which is coming out of Scotland. So we have different models that we're looking at that would empower local communities much more than they are now using a national currency.
Right, interesting. Yeah, keeping it within the community. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Morrison, the guy who invented permaculture. I mean, that was one of his things. Was again a holistic approach, not just creating a permaculture place, but you actually have to change the monetary system and the economic system.
Well, that's the challenge, and we're attempting to do that in Sonoma County. We have an organization, Go Local Sonoma County Cooperative, which is positioned to do that, to create a local currency. So we're hoping to help launch this through the conference.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, will that be one of the workshops?
Yes, it will be one of the workshops, and there will be people talking about the local currencies on a panel as well. And then Tom Greco, who was one of the experts on this, will be giving a plenary address. And his book, which just came out, is fascinating on this. I think he's one of the most knowledgeable people about creating local currencies. And about debt and money that's created out of debt, which ours is.
Right.
He's written a book called The End of Money and the Future of Civilization.
The End of Money.
Isn't that a great title?
I love it.
So, and that's something we're talking about at the conference, too, is the fact that our money is created out of debt. And it doesn't need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, what do we create money out of, and why do we create it out of debt? Because in this system, we can never be out of debt.
Right.
It's impossible. It's built into the system. Debt is built into the system.
So it's the old company store thing.
In a way.
Yeah. Hasn't changed much.
No. So to change that would be huge.
Well, that's it. I mean, what dislocations do you see happening in this process of change, if you can make it that happen?
Now, I'm not quite sure I understand what you just asked.
Well, to change an economic system, that will cause dislocations to the economic system, which is there as it's being switched over. I mean, you know, how has that transition been looked at?
Well, I think, I probably can't begin to answer that question like a lot of the speakers at the conference, like David Corton, somebody who's really, and Tom Greco, people who are used to working in this area, and James Galbraith. But I think empowering the local economy is part of the solution here. If local economies, I mean, in Sonoma County, for instance, we can grow a lot of food here.
Right.
And we can actually create a lot of our own business and work with each other in a way that maybe some other places can't, but we have the opportunity and the possibilities here to do that. So I think the first thing is establishing local currencies, support for local business, and starting to unplug from the corporate world.
Mm-hmm. Now, how is that legally, the local currency thing?
Well, they're legal.
That? Yeah.
They are legal. One can establish them, and there are several in the country.
And the IRS doesn't interfere with it yet? Or?
Not that I know of. I mean, you still would be paying taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I haven't heard of any interference on it.
Oh, good.
Because it is legal.
Oh, okay. You know, it seems like they'll find some way of making it.
Well, there were local currencies in the 1930s, and after the New Deal policies went in, the local currencies were declared illegal. So that is something going into creating local currencies again, because they became so powerful at that point, they were eventually declared illegal. So one has to look at this and eventually be looking at, okay, we need legislation that will maintain the legality of local currencies, and we need to be thinking about it now.
Right, so you've got to have the politicians on board then.
Yes, you do.
All the way down the line.
It's like one really has to be thinking ahead on things like this, because you have to anticipate the backlash, anticipate the legislation process, and be all ready to move on them.
Exactly. Exactly. So what other workshops will be held at the conference to give a...
Well, we actually have quite a list of them, for everything from a conversation on money, race, and class, Something on sacred economics. We have, although Hazel Henderson can't be there in person, we're having a DVD, The Future of Money, and then she's going to be available by phone to answer questions.
Hmm.
So we have that, and we have Sam Keen doing a more in-depth Deconstructing the Myth of Money. We have Fostering the Global Commons. The Mondragon Cooperative people are going to be doing a workshop as well as their plenary presentation. We have some workshops on local currencies, on common good investing, and social networks for collaboration and local currencies. We have a Marxist look at social change in an economic, in an epoch of economic revolution.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so we have quite a broad spectrum, social finance, the Green New Deal, slow money, things like that.
Mm.
And SF, Sonoma State University, there's also going to be a course, a class within the conference put on by Art Warmoth from the psychology faculty and Francisco Varquez from the who's the director of the Hutchins School at the university.
Oh, excellent! You really, you know, for this conference, you've done what you want the conference to do.
Yes, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to really put in a broad look at some things that are often left out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the business community is always brought in, but the Marxists aren't.
Right.
Well, we're bringing them in, too, because it's important to have the spectrum.
Yeah.
And to see, you know, to look more analytically at the kinds of economic system we've grown up in.
And exactly, what we don't see anymore.
What we don't see anymore. And it takes a look from an analysis that's outside the system to really shed a light on it.
Yes. No, I mean, it's an incredible idea for a conference, and I think it's going to be very, very popular.
I hope you're right.
I expect it is certain. Have you gauged a certain capacity?
Well, we can't have more than 300.
Oh.
Because we just don't have the space with the venues. But the two evenings that we do have a bigger meeting space, we can have more people come just for the evening, like to hear James Galbraith or Vandana Shiva. But all the other programs are in smaller spaces, so our 300 is our capacity.
So how will the tickets be sold? By event or by a day? Or?
Well, no, we're not doing it by day yet. If we don't sell out the conference, then we will make daily rates available for certain ones.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not really going to make that announcement until 2 weeks before the conference.
Oh, okay.
Because we would like to fill it up.
Yeah.
So that's our plan, but we will have tickets available for the Tuesday and Thursday night that week, regardless of whether we fill it or not.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
For Galbraith and Vandana Shiva, we'll have outside tickets available for those events.
Mm.
But I hope we fill it. It would be lovely.
I think so. I mean, it's too good. It's too interesting not to.
Well, I appreciate hearing that.
In this area especially, I mean, I say it's wonderful being in Sonoma County. We're so lucky to have so many people who are looking forward and but bringing good stuff from the past.
Well, that's, you know, one of the selling points that I put in our brochure for the conference being held in Sonoma is that our county had the highest voter turnout in the last election of any county in the state.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and can you imagine? I mean, I'm going to ask you to guess what our voter turnout was.
Well, it was pretty good because of Obama, 75%.
93.4.
Oh, my goodness.
If it were any higher, we'd be accused of doing, you know, Banana Republic kind of elections.
Exactly. They were dragging people in on wheelchairs
right.
And everything. Oh,
but I've never seen anything that high. 93.4 is just extraordinary. I couldn't believe it when I first saw it online. I thought, there's got to be a mistake.
Yeah.
And I kept going back to the site, and it kept being the same amount.
Huh.
And finally, I realized, this is serious. This is our turnout, and it was the highest in the state.
Wow.
So it's a very involved community.
Yes.
Here. And very engaged, and I would say very well informed.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we say things on the radio and people call up and, no, you're wrong. So, oh, yeah.
People are reading, they're discussing, and it's an exciting place to live. And I think because of that, it's also a wonderful place to do this conference.
Well, yes, indeed. Maybe why don't you give out the information and the website and everything again so everyone can write it down?
All right. Well, the easiest way to get to these web pages is www.economicsofpeace.net. Economicsofpeace.net. And then the Praxis Peace Institute has a way to this site also, which is praxispeace.org, praxispeace.org. And I'll also give out a phone number, which is 707-939-2973. And one can register for the conference online or by calling our office and the phone number I just gave.
Well, fantastic. And the Economics of Peace Conference coming up on October 18th to 23rd.
That's it.
And, well, thank you very, very much, Georgia, for calling in and giving us the heads up on this.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, great. I hope it wasn't too difficult for you.
Not in the least. I love doing this.
Oh, great.
All right. Thank you, Arnold.
Thank you so much, Georgia, and good luck with it.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.